Okay, we're beginning here on top of Dalet Amud Aleph, six lines down. The Gemara is going back to discuss the pasuk that it brought at the beginning of this section of the sugya, which is by an Amai Vriya, Parshens Vim Shlash Ela Lo Yasela, Vayatzachinam Ein Kasef. If you don't do these three things to her, then she goes free without any compensation. Over there, the Torah in the beginning of Parshat Mishpatim discusses the choices that the Adon faces with the Ama Ivriya. One of them is for him to marry her, the owner himself to marry her. One possibility is Yehud, to give it to his son to marry. The other one is to allow her to buy her way out or buy her freedom out. And if none of those three apply to her, then Vayatzachinam Ein Kasef. From there, Chazal Darshan, that there is another form of Yitziyah for an Ama Ivriya. Numerous, actually, forms of Yitziyot for an Ama Ivriya. Those that parallel an Eved Ivri, which is that the Yovel, and after 6 years of service, that she would go free. But the Ama Ivriya also has an additional aspect to her, which is that if she reaches the age of maturity, if she reaches the age of puberty, then she also goes free. And that's learned out, Vayetzachinam Ein Kasef. If you look at the Rishonim, the commentaries on the Chumash, that they bring that as the meaning of Vayatzachinam Ein Kasef. Yesterday we used Vayatzachinam Ein Kasef, Ein Kesef La Don Zeh, Avyesh Kesef La Don Acher. So from that we learned out that this Adon, this master doesn't have money, but some other master has money. And yesterday's daf, by the end we came to the conclusion that the money belongs to the father, and that's in situations where the Kiddushin are accepted by the father, he also gets the Kesef belongs to him. So now the Gemara says, "V'hai v'yatzachinam l'hachihu da'ata." Is that what limud that we get out of those words of v'yatzachinam? Hamibayle the ketanya. We need that for this brayta. Ketanya v'yatzachinam elu yimei bagrut en kosef elu yimei narut. So this is what we just described: that the woman or the ama ivriya who reaches the age of maturity, she goes free. And here you see a braita that is being dereshed at from the pasuk of Yatzachinam, Elu Yimei Bagrut, meaning reaching the age of being a bogeret, which is 12 and a half. And in Kasef is Elu Yimei Narut, which is age of 12. And again, assuming that she's reached the age of puberty, those ages, she would go free. Now, Amar Avina, Imtein Lemakra, Ein Kasef. The pasuk should have said Ein Kasef without a yud, a chaser. My Ein Kasef. With a yud, a malay, ein kesef ladon ze, aveyesh kesef ladon acher. So he sees in the addition of the yud, or the word ein being malay, that he's able to darshan two things from the pasuk. One drasha is the drasha of the braita, which is that when she comes of age, she goes free. The second drasha is from the word ein kesef being malay, that ein kesef ladon ze, aveyesh kesef ladon acher, which is the limud that we got from yesterday. Uman nihu, and who is that? The av, the father of the bride. How do we know that you would doresh in this manner? How do we know that the yud is significant in changing the meaning of the word ein, or that we'd be doresh something from the fact that there's a malay instead of a chaser? The Tanya, because we have a braita of a masechet Yevamot, v'zera ein la. So this is talking about a bat kohen who marries a Israel. If they have children, then she may not return to her father's house to eat truma. On the other hand, if her husband passes away and she has no offspring, then she returns to her father's house in order to eat truma. So over there it says, v'zera ein la, that she has no offspring. Ein li ela zara, that's only true if she doesn't have direct offspring. Zera zara minayin, what happens if she has not direct offspring, but grandchildren that issued from her? Her children passed away, but the grandchildren are still alive when her husband passes away. How do we know then she cannot return to her father's house? Tamaloma zera ein la, ayin la. You have to look after her, you have to check after her. Ve'ein le'ela zera kasher. That's only true if she has proper offspring. Zera pasul min ayin. How do we know that by zera pasul it also applies? Tamaloma zera ein la. So then we have again the same limud of zera ein la, ayin la. Check out, make sure that she has no offspring over here. Va fikte le zera zara. Didn't you already deal with grandchildren? How could you make this also the limud for psulim? Zera zara lo yitzrich kra. There we don't need a pasuk. The bnei banim, aryan kibanim. Comes to grandchildren, they have the din of children. the Zerah Pasul. And what we need the Pasuk for is the Zerah Pasul. So again, here, the idea being that the Ayin that we're using, the Yud Malay that we're using as Hashpa'ah here. So let's first of all start with the premise of the Gemara here. The first thing is that the Gemara takes it for granted that B'nei Banim Harim Kibanim, that grandchildren have the status of children. While that is true in the area of Yivama and the areas in the area of Yivama, it's not as clear the application of this outside the area of Yivama. And the Gemara in many places has to bring a limud to support the fact that B'nei Banim Harim Kibanim, where it becomes very controversial in terms of B'nei Banim Harim Kibanim, is with regards to saying Kaddish. And whether grandchildren have the same status of children, there's a amazing Tshuva Tarama about this, about a family that's asking for their grandchild to say Kaddish for the deceased because their children have passed away and there's only a grandchild there, whether they have Kdimut to the Amud, because in their day, only one person davened, and each of the Kaddishim was divided up by amongst the people who were Chiyuvim there. Does this individual, this grandchild, get a part of, become a part of that cycle, have a right in that cycle? So anyway, there are two votes about that, and whether B'nei Banim Hariyem Kibbanim, also in the area of Pru Revu, does B'nei Banim Hariyem Kibbanim also have application over there? So it comes up in other places. One of the distinctions that is important is the difference between the word Ben and the word Zera. When it comes to Zera, Zera means offspring in the more generic and general sense. And that's why probably the Gemara here and Yivamot takes it for granted that B'nei Banim Hariyem Kibbanim with regards to Yivama is because the word used here is Zera. Zera does not imply just a single generation. It means multiple offspring, any offspring that you have. And therefore, B'nei Banim Hariyem Kibbanim, the Gemara takes as a given. On the other hand, when you say the word Ben, child, child means child of any form, whether kasher, whether pasul, irrespective of the nature of the child. On the other hand, Zera is seen as being a Zera kasher. And that's why the Gemara over here has the darshan that Zera pasul is also Zera. So the specific use of the word Zera has two implications. One of which is that B'nei Banim Harim Banim is taken for granted. Number two is that we assume Zera kasher unless we have a limud that teaches us Zera pasul, which was the conclusion of the Gemara. That Zera ein ba, from that we learn out that Zera pasul also counts. And how do we know that? We know that because it says Zera Ein La. The Gemara Dashin's from the Ein over there, Ayin Ba. Now, the question about what that drasha is, there are many places, and this is not just a phenomenon of Chazal, it's actually a phenomenon in the Tanakh, that the letters in the alphabet are categorized by the sound, or how the sound is made. So you have the Otiyot Guruniyot, which are those sounds that come out of the throat. You have the Odiot, Lamnar, which are come from the same place. And therefore, you'll see that the Tanakh exchanges letters in the same category freely, without any consideration. For instance, a good example of that is Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuchadrezzar. The Tanakh freely goes between the two of them, as if there's no difference between them. That's because they're in the same category, Lamnar. Those four letters all derive from the same place in terms of the making of the sound, Lamed Mem Nun Reish. And therefore, the exchange of Nun and Reish is done freely in Tanakh. The same thing is with the Otiot, Agroniot. These letters are Aleph, Ayin, Chet, Reish, Hey. What you see is a free exchange. So what might be happening here is the exchange of the Aleph and the Ayin, which is along those lines of exchanging Otiot, Agroniot, that the Aleph and the Ayin get switched out. And that's the Drasha of Chazal here. Or the other possibility is the reading of the word here, instead of Zera Ein La, to read the Pasuk as Zera, because of the Yud, Ayin La. Ayin La with an Aleph, which is Kamo Yesh Mi Ayin, something from nothing. So Ayin would be nothing. So Zera Ayin La, she has absolutely no offspring. So there are those that have darshan in that manner, that not that we're exchanging the Aleph for the Ayin, but rather the word Ein we're reading as Ayin with an aleph, which means nothing. That will help us in the next section of the Gemara if you read it this way, because the next drasha in the Gemara is even more difficult. But based on that, you see that the yud has hashpa'ah on the drasha. And that's the point of the Gemara over here. That yud here changes the way that we darshan the word. Had it written it with chaser, we wouldn't have been able to make these drashot, whether it's ayin with ayin yud nun, or it's ayin aleph yud nun. either way, we need the yud there to make the drasha. And so we see that the yud is mashpia on being doresh words with a yud malay or chaser. The Ri notes that when we say that zera pasul, it can't be referring to zera pasul. Because any way that she would have zera pasul would also make her psula lekuna. If she's psula lekuna, she can't return as a bat kohen to eat truma in her father's house. And so therefore it must be done about zera zera, that is psula. So if her grandchild is a mamzer and her children passed away, that mamzer grandchild will prevent her from returning to her father's house to eat truma. So now the Gemara says, V'tane gufe minole de darish hachi. That's very nice. You brought us a proof from that braita that the word ayin with the word ein with a yud in it is darshan as ayin, whether with an ayin or ayin with an aleph. Either way, the drusha that you made derives from the extra yud there. But how does the tan of the braita know that that's an acceptable form of drusha? How does he know that the word could have been ein and instead it's ayin? So Amrei Ktiv, the pasuk says, so here, Me'ein Bil'am, oh, Me'ein Yivami. So there the pasuk says that the simple interpretation, this is what makes this very difficult, is Me'ein Bil'am means that Bil'am refused. Me'ein Yivami, the Yivam refuses to do that which is incumbent upon him. Delo Ktiv Behu Yud. There's no Yud. You see the word Ein is spelled without a Yud in it. And over here you have it Malay, Shmaminola Drusha Hu Da'ata. And therefore it comes for a Drusha. What they're proving from here is that the word Me'ain, or the word Ain is found in the Torah without a Yud in it. Since it's found without a Yud in it, therefore when it does have a Yud in it, it's significant and we will be Doresh. The big problem with that is that this is not grammatically correct. The Shoresh of Me'ain Bil'am or Me'ain Yivami is from the word Ma'ain, which means to refuse. Mem Aleph Nun is the Shoresh. On the other hand, the word Ayin or Ein comes from Aleph Yud Nun. It doesn't have a Mem in the Shoresh. And so for that reason, it's very difficult to understand the Gemara's proof from these two cases where the Shoresh is different. But if you look in Rashi, Rashi makes it clear that he sees these words based on the Gemara here to be similar in nature, which is Me'ein Yivil Am is Ein bidato lelechimanu. He has no intention of going with us. Now that goes back to what I was suggesting before, what I mentioned before with regards to what is the drusha from the word ein. So I said before that one possibility is they exchange the otiot graniot, the ayin and the aleph, and therefore ayin ba means to look into or to check into. The other hand, I said there was an alternative to view it that it was still spelled with an aleph, but instead of saying ein, it's ayin, nothing. And so then, in that case, and that's probably what Rashi is hinting at over here, is that when it says Me'ein Bil'am or Me'ein Yivami, right, there Rashi is dashing it as being Ein, right, Ein in the sense of not doing it, or Ayin, that they refuse. Refuse means that they will not engage or they will do nothing. So Me'ein Bil'am means Bil'am refuses to do, means he'll do nothing, or Me'ein Yivami, the Yivam refuses to do what is incumbent on him, or Ayin, he will do nothing. In that case, it might be that you could connect between the words if you keep the drasha in that way and say that the meaning of the word me'ain is similar to the meaning of the word ain before. Now, there is a possibility over here that the fact that the words over here, me'ain bilam or me'ain yivami, do not start with a chirik, which would normally be the conjugation for such a verb, would be me'ain bilam or me'ain yivami. And here the Torah does not use a chirik. That's what pushes the Gemara here to darshan it as not being the word ma'ein, to refuse, but rather ein, or a derivative of the word ein, is because of the fact that it doesn't have a chirik in the beginning, which would normally be the way that the verb is conjugated. So for any number of these reasons, the Gemara sees these words being parallel. Again, it's not the simplest way to view it. You would normally translate them as being different words, but the Gemara connects between them and sees from this a green light to darshan the word ein when there's a yud inside of it. So we had two drushas, the zera ein la, and then our case over here, which is v'yatzachinam ein kosef. And so both of those cases where it's malay and there's a yud in it, there the Gemara sees a green light to darshan additional items from that word. But now the Gemara says, v'yitzrich l'michtav kidusha l'aviyah, v'yitzrich l'michtav maseh yada l'aviyah. So now we have two drashot. One drasha is Ve'yatzah Chinam Ein Kasef, that the father is entitled to the Kesef Kiddushin. We also had the Limud from Amah Ivriya, which taught us that the father, since he has a right to Chim Kor Ish et Bito Amah, that he has a right to sell his daughter to be an Amah Ivriya, that also entitled him to her Masei Yadayim, to her output. So the Gemara wants to know, why do I need both of those? If he's entitled to her Kesef Kiddushin, isn't that evidence of the fact that he's entitled to her output? Or the other way around, if he's entitled to her output, isn't that evidence he's entitled to her Kesef Kiddushin? Gemara says, no, we need both of them. If we only had the pasuk of Yatzach Chinam in Kasef, that the Kesef Kiddushim goes to the father, because she did nothing to create that value. The Kesef Kiddushim are really a part of her being born and existing and be able to enter into a marriage. She does nothing in of herself to produce that value or create that value. Aval Masiyada, the Katarchabu, on the other hand, the Masiyadaim, her output, where she actually works to generate that, Ema Didahavu. Maybe they should belong to her. Vyashmino Masiyada, the Ka Mitzanamine. If you say that, we only had the Pasuk that taught us that Bechim Korishet Bitode Ama, which she says is that the father gets the Masiyadaim of his daughter, we would have thought because that's quid pro quo for his feeding her and taking care of her. Aval Kidusha, the Mi'alma Ka'atilo, but Kiddushin, which come from some outside venue, Ema Didavu, maybe they belong to her because the father's not giving her anything in exchange for Masiyadayim Tzricha. Therefore, we need both Limudim, one to teach us that the Kesef Kiddushin belong to the father, the other to teach us that the Masiyadayim belong to the father. Again, this idea that the Masiyadayim are exchanged for Mizonoth is a looser connection than we have by a husband and wife, because technically the father is not obligated to support his daughter except at very young ages, or any of his children at very young ages. That was Takanat Usha. The Takanat Usha was that a person take care of their children. But even that is capped out at ages like 12 and does not extend beyond that. So the fact that there is this exchange or quid pro quo is a looser connection, but they're using the paradigm of husband and wife to say that the daughter and father have a similar relationship, and therefore the Masiyadayim is an exchange for the Mizonot. And because it's not as tight a definition, that means that even if her Masiyadayim exceed the normal output of a woman during the week, that doesn't mean she gets to keep it. It still all goes to her father. And it's not like a husband and wife where she has the Tosefet or the Yeter on the Masiyadayim, which she's able to keep for herself, or that's done in exchange for other privileges that she gets from her husband. So here again, it's a looser connection. Gufa, Yatzach Chinam, Elu Yemei Bagrut. Ein Kasef, Elu Yemei Narut. Lichtov Rachmana Narut, Velo Yemei Bagrut. Why do you have to write Bagrut? As soon as you get to Narut, Narut is a time period before Bagrut. Every Bogeret has to pass through Narut before she gets to her Bagrut. If that's the case, then if you tell me she goes free when she's a Nara, then of course she's free by the time she gets to be a Bogeret. So why do I need a limbo that teaches me both Bogeret and Nara? So Amaraba Bazeh Vili Meidalzeh. This one comes to teach about the other. Meidah Dehavi A Toshav V'Sachir. Similar to the case of a Toshav and Sachir, which is the Tanya. Toshav Zeh Kanui Kinyan Olam. Toshav refers to someone who is acquired forever. Sachir Zeh Kanui Kinyan Shanim. That is someone who is acquired only for a temporary time. Both of these are speaking about an Eved Ivri. The first one is a case of an Eved Ivri who was nirtza. He got his ear pierced and agreed or wanted to remain with his master until the Yovel. So here, that's called a Toshav. A Sachir is a regular Eved Ivri who's in for the 6 years and then is released in the 7th year. That's a regular Eved Ivri. What we are taught here through this Braita is that they are not entitled to eat truma when they are working for the Kohen. On the other hand, the Kohen's possessions, those that are kinyan kaspo, they are all entitled to eat truma. That includes his wife, that includes an Eved Kenani, that includes his animals, anything that's kinyan kaspo. What the Bright is telling us over here is that Toshav and Sachir do not have that status, and therefore they cannot participate in those things that the Kohen participates in. So now it says Toshav v'Sachir. Toshav and Sachir are not permitted. Braita says, Yomar Toshav or Yomar Sachir. If you tell me that a Toshav, someone who is staying till the Yovel, does not qualify as Kinyan Kaspo, then Why do I need Sakhir at all? Of course, if he is there to the Yovel, he's not considered to be Kinyan Kaspo of the Kohen. If he's there only for 6 years, he's certainly not Kinyan Kaspo of the Kohen. Rani Omer, Kanui Kinyan Olam Eino Ochel, Kanui Kinyan Shanim Lo Koshukain. If a Toshav doesn't eat, then certainly a Sakhir is not going to eat. You don't need both of them. Ilu Kain, Hayiti Omer. Because if it were not for the fact that we had the both of them in the Limud, we'd have said, Toshav Ze Kanui Kinyan Shanim. I would have interpreted the word Toshav to say that it's talking about a Kinyan Shanim. Basically, I will take the least Chiddush in the Pasuk. So if I only had one word in the Pasuk to exclude somebody from eating Truma, the person I would exclude is someone who was working for 6 years and goes free in the seventh year. But someone who was there until the Yovel, I would assume that there can seem to be a Kinyan Kesef of the Kohen and they could eat in the Truma. So the Torah has to come along about Kanoi Kinyan Olam Ochem. So Basachir, who we made all Toshav. The fact that I have two words here shows me that the first one that I exclude is the Kinyan Shanim. So now I have another word, now I'm going to exclude the Kinyan Olam as well. I'll exclude the one who was more likely to be included, I'll also exclude them. Shapo Pisha Kanui Kinyan Olam in Ochel. So even though he's Kanui Kinyan Olam, he's not considered to be the Kinyan Kaspo of the Kohen. So that's similar over here. We're doing the same thing with regards to Bagrut and Narut. Had you only had one word, we would have assumed least chiddush. The least chiddush is bagrut, that she would only go out when she's a bogeret. So what do we say? See, a second word says not only when she's a bogeret, but even when she is a ne'ara. So you're right, in the end, we don't need to know bogeret. Similar to by the Kohen, we don't need to know kinyan shanim in the end, because if kinyan olam is excluded, then certainly kinyan shanim. And here too, if a ne'ara is excluded, then so too is a bogeret. But I wouldn't get to Nara. I wouldn't get to someone who's Kanui, Kinyan Olam, except for the fact that I have two Limudim. One that gets me first the lesser of the Chidushim, and then the second word that gets me to the bigger Chiddush. So in our case, the lesser Chiddush would be to say that a Bugeret goes free. The bigger Chiddush is to say even a Nara goes free. In the case of the Kohen, the least lesser Chiddush is to say that a Kinyan Shanim does not get to eat. The bigger Chiddush is to say that Kanui Kinyan Olam, someone who's there to the Yovel doesn't get to eat. And I need both words to teach me that. Amalei Abaye says about that explanation of Rabba, Midomi. The cases are not parallel. Hotam Trey Gufe Ninhu. By the case of Evet, someone who is a Kinyan Shanim is not a Kanui Kinyan Olam. They're two different categories or individuals, and the two can never be simultaneously, or the same individual will not be both. Since, because, Tchinami Katav Rachmana Toshav, had the Torah just written Toshav Nirtza Lo Yochal, I mean, had it written it out, that a Toshav Nirtza doesn't eat, Vada Kantav Itach, and then wrote the other one, Habi Sakhir Milta the Achi of a Kavachomer. Then Sakhir would be something that you could have learned from a Kavachomer, the Milta Achi of a Kavachomer, Tarach Vakadal Vakra. And something that comes out of a Kavachomer, the Pusk went out of its way to write down. Even though it wasn't necessary, but the fact is that it doesn't write it explicitly that Toshav Nirtza Lo Yochal, and therefore, we need to have a limud that gets us from one to the other. On the other hand, our case here, here it's one individual. That if she already went free when she is a nara, then there's no concept of bagrut. Bagrut cannot exist. You can't say that if the Torah explicitly told us that she goes free when she is a nara, then we'll have a kavachomer, and the Torah would have written bagrut as well. That's not true. Once you write that she goes free as a nara, there's absolutely no necessity to write down bagrut. Because, on the other hand, if you told us that a toshav nirtza lo yochal, if you tell us that an Eved Ivri who's there till the yovel cannot eat in truma, then you're right, you don't have to. But if the Torah wrote it, it doesn't seem strange that the Torah would also tell us that a toshav shanim or a sechir shanim, because they're two different categories. Just because a nirtza doesn't eat, doesn't automatically mean that a shanim doesn't eat, because you could be talking about two individuals. On the other hand, if you tell me that a ne'ara is free, then why would the Torah even mention bogeret? You'll never ever have a scenario where you have a bogeret who it wasn't a ne'ara already. You can have a sechir shanim. You can have a eved ivri l'shanim that's not an eved that's nirtza, since they're two entities. And so Abai says, I don't see these as being parallel cases. El Amar Abai. So Abaye suggests an alternative view over here. Lo nitzrecha ela leboger de'ailonit. There are cases where she will not reach the age of Narut, but she will reach the age of Bagrut. She will skip over the age of Narut. which is, we have had this when we learned this in Masechet Yevamot, with regards to the signs of an Ailonit. An Ailonit is a girl who does not get the regular simanim, meaning reaching the age of puberty or signs of maturity. So then she's deemed to be an Ailonit, a girl who does not develop properly and therefore will not bear children because she doesn't develop normally like a female. So now that Ailonit will never reach the age of Narut because she'll never reach the age of puberty. So there, Sagadat Chamina binarut tipok, bibagrut lo tipok, you would have thought then, based on the Pasuk, that a Na'ara would go free, but a Bogeret would not go free, meaning that only if she reaches the age of puberty will she go free, but a girl who never reaches the age of puberty, she will not have any age release. Kamash Malan, that even a Bogeret goes free. And that's why you need both Na'ara and the Bogeret, because they can be two separate individuals or two separate cases. There's a possibility of being a Bogeret without being a Ne'ara. And therefore, Kamash Malon, that the earlier of these two, you will go free. Either she's a Ne'ara, which means that she has reached the age of puberty and the age of 12. So that'll be one way to give her go to free. The other possibility is she reaches that being a Bogeret without the other two items. And that would be at the age of 20. At the age of 20 in Masechet Vamot, we learned that once you reach the age of 20 and she does not show signs of a female maturity, then she's deemed to be an Ailonit. So there is an age by which we can determine that a girl is a Bogeret, even though she has not reached the age of Narut. And so there we have two separate paths here that allow for the release of the Ama Ivriya. Because we assume that there might be delayed maturity, which is possible, that a girl or boy will have, their maturity will come at a much later date. Once you reach a certain point in time, age of 20 or maybe it'll drop later, if they don't show signs of physical maturity, of changing into a male or female at that point in time, it's unlikely or it's almost impossible for them to reach that point afterwards. Yeah, there is a cutoff where there's no longer considered to be a delay, but rather it's considered to be a permanent state. And that's true not only in the Gemara, but even medically. That if the hormones don't kick in by a certain time to determine their physically maturing as a male or a female, then afterwards the hormones won't help anymore. Matifla Marba Ravashi. Marba Ravashi challenges Abaye's explanation. V'lav kavachomer, isn't it a kavachomer? Umas simanim she'ein motzim reshut av, motzim reshut adom. Simanim being the age of puberty, reaching the age of Na'ara, which release a girl from the adon, from being an Ama Ivriya, but they do not release her from her father. Her father still has auspices over her. That's what we learned yesterday, that when the girl is in Na'ara and her father has a right to marry her off, then he gets the kesef. Or we learned from Nidarim, b'nu'reha beit aviyah, koshevech nu'reha le'beit aviyah, that all the benefits of the Na'ara accrue to the father. So the father still has auspices over his daughter when she's in Na'ara. On the other hand, when it comes to the Adon, an Ama Ivriya is released at the time of Na'ara. Bagrut, Shemotziyah Mishutav. Bagrut does not only free her from the Adon, also frees her from the father. If a girl reaches the age of Bagrut, the father has no longer has any auspices over the daughter. That's not for Hatarat Nidarim. That's not for the Shevach that comes from her, Masa Yadayim, her Kesef Kiddushin. None of those belong to the father when she reaches the age of Bagrut. So, Enu Din Shemotziyah Mishut Adon. Certainly that should release her from the Adon. Meaning that I don't need a pasuk to tell me Bagrut in particular, because if by Na'arut, where the father does not lose control, the Adon does lose control, then by Bagrut, where the father does lose control, then certainly the Adon will lose control at the age of Bagrut. I don't need a pasuk to teach me that. I can learn that as a kavachomer from Ni'ara. Ella Aramar Baravashi lo nitzuchala li'ikar zvina da'ilonit. That's to tell you that the sale of an Ailonit works. If a girl matures and reaches the age of Narut properly, then the ability of her father to sell her as an Ama Ivriya works. Because the Parsha says that once she reaches the age of Narut, she goes free. So only someone who reaches the age of Narut might be subject to the Parshia of Ama Ivriya. Dolatia Simanei Narut, a girl who never reaches the Simanei Narut, Lovia Zvina Zvina. then her sale would not be a sale, meaning that you would not be allowed to sell a girl in as an Amah Ivriya. Tosfot asks the fundamental question, how do you know? When you're selling her as Ektana, an Amah Ivriya is only in a case where she's Ektana, and the father is selling off as an Amah Ivriya, how does he have any idea whether she's going to reach the age of Narut or not? Because those are signs of maturity that only appear later on. The fact that she will be or won't be a Nara, it is not discerned at this point in time. Marbar Vashi's suggestion here is that it won't be a sale. That if you try to sell an Ilonit as an Amah Ivriya, the sale will fail. That's what it says. How do you know that the sale fails? Because at the time that you're selling her, there's no evidence of whether she is or not an Ilonit. So what Tosafot says is that it's a refund. What happens is later on, when we discover that she is a Bogeret, we unwind the sale retroactively. Which means that, number one, the kesef that the father received for the Amah Ivriya, he'll have to return to the Adon. And the Adon who got the Masa Yadayim, which is what he purchased, in essence, he purchased her Masa Yadayim, he purchased the annuity. He paid for the Amah Ivriya to buy the annuity of her output until she reaches the age of Narut. Of that output, he will have to return to the father. And so what Tosafot says is, yeah, you'll unwind the sale retroactively, because that's the only way we'll know later on that she didn't reach the age of Narut. Right? Others suggest that, and there is such things in the Gemara in Yevamot, which is that there are certain simanim that even early on, we can see that a girl is not maturing or if she is an Ilonit, because there are certain markers that tell us that she's an Ilonit even before she reaches the age of maturity. And if she has some of those markers, it's a possibility that we'd be able to determine it earlier than just at the age of 20. And then Tosafot also adds on that the other possibility of him, the Adon, marrying her or giving her over to his son, that would not be part of this. Because since the sale wasn't a good sale, then the marriage that would derive from this also would not be a good marriage, and therefore they couldn't perform Yihud in that case. So Tosafot says, even though we might find the information later, we'd have to reverse or undo anything that came about from this. Kamash Malon, that's what the Pasuk is teaching us about Bagrut. The Yatzach Chinam in Kasef, that you may Narut and you may Magrut teaches you that an Amah Ivriya was sold as a young girl and then turns into an Nara, she goes free. The young girl was sold. And then later on we find out that she's an Ilonit. That sale is a good sale because we see that Bagrut is a release. And the fact that Bagrut is a release is telling us that there's some times when you'll have Bagrut without Narut. And even though you have Bagrut and Narut, that's still a good case of Amah Ivriya. And the father is allowed to sell, or the Adon is allowed to buy, the Amah Ivriya in that instance. And so that's what the Chiddush is according to Marbar Rav Ashi, which is that, not that she goes free when she's a Bogeret, that's a Kal v'chomer. But rather, the fact that the Torah tells you she goes free when she's a Bogeret, teaches you that an Ilonit can be sold as an Amah Ivriya. Because otherwise, why would you need the Bogeret to teach you something separate from Narut? Every girl is a Bogeret passed through Narut. The only one who doesn't do that is an Ilonit. That shows you that an Ilonit can be sold as an Amah HaIvriya. Now the Gemara says, Ulamar Baravashi Damar, Velav Kal Vachomer Hu. According to my Baravashi, who says that, isn't it a Kal Vachomer? Ha'amrinan, Milti Adachi B'Kal Vachomer, Tarach V'Kadav Lakra. Even if you want to say that, yes, it's a Kal Vachomer, you could argue, and that's what Abayi would say to Marbar Rav Ashi, sometimes the Torah goes out of its way to write something even though it is a Kal Vachomer. So the Gemara's question is not fundamentally on Marbar Rav Ashi's pshat here. Their problem is with his question on Abayi, which is that the fact that he went to an alternative explanation is because he said Abayi is wrong. Abayi is wrong because you could have learned out Bogeret from a Kal Vachomer. Why did the Torah write it then? So the Gemara says, we have many places, or we have this principle, which is that sometimes something that can be learned logically, the Torah goes out of its way and writes it down, despite the fact that you would have known it anyway through logic. The Gemara says, no, that's only in a case where we don't have an alternative drasha. That's the last resort. The last resort is, if we have nothing else to do with this word, we'll say that the Torah wrote a Kal Vachomer, and the Torah wrote something down that you could have learned logically anyway. The Torah just did it, even though it didn't need to. But that's like a last resort. If we have any other alternative to learn something from it, we will do that. If we have an ability to explain it and give some more meaning to it without saying that, we will do that. And that's what Marav Rashi is saying. Look, you're right, it's a Kal Vachomer. And you're right, the Torah might have gone out of its way to write something down that's a Kal Vachomer. But that's only true if I can't find another drasha over here. I found a different drasha that doesn't run into that problem. And therefore, Bogeret will go free mi Kal Vachomer. And the fact that Bogeret's mentioned in the Pasuk teaches me a different din, which is the din that an amavriya can be an ilonit, or an ilonit can be an amavriya. And that if a father sells his daughter and she turns out to be an ilonit, that's still considered to be an amavriya. And again, it is a big chiddush, because an amavriya, as we said before, when the amavriya is sold to the adon, it's clear from the Torah that the purpose of an amavriya is not simply for her output or the annuity that he bought, but rather the reason that an amavriya is sold in is to be a wife to this individual. It's almost like a precursor to marriage. Two out of the three options that he has are, number one, to marry her. Number two is to marry her to his son. And the third one is basically to let her go free or allow her to buy herself out of her freedom. So you see here that the main purpose of an amavriya is for marriage. If she turns out to be an ilonit, you would have thought maybe that annuls the whole transaction over here, because then two out of the three options are not real options anymore, because she's an ilonit. And he would not have married her, or that's considered to be a mekach ta'ut in terms of marriage. And so even though over here, the kesef that is used to purchase the amavriya will double as the kesef kiddushin later on, that's a machloket, we'll see in the Gemara how exactly it works, but there is a daya that it works as kesef kiddushin, then you can understand why you would think that if she's found to be an ilonit, that the transaction is annulled, or it wasn't a good transaction, because almost built into the transaction here is the possibility of marriage, or future marriage. And the fact that that will not be true anymore, or not be the type of marriage that the person considered, then that might have annulled it. That's what you need the limud of Ma'ariv of Rashi to teach you, that even if she's an ilonit, she can be an amavriya, and she is considered to be an amavriya. It's not a mekach ta'ut. It's not a problematic sale. All right, Gemara says, "Petana maiti la mahocha." Petana gets it from here. Detanya, kikach ish isha u'bala. So now, the Gemara, if you remember, began with the two questions. The Gemara ran with one question, which was, how do we know that kesef works to generate kiddushin? Number two is, how do we know that the kesef kiddushin belongs to the father? So we ended up addressing the second question first, which is, how do we know the kesef kiddushin belongs to the father? And that's what we've been dealing with until now. Now the Gemara goes back to deal with the first question is, how do you know that kesef works for kiddushin? So again, we mentioned yesterday that the Gemara already mentioned it twice. Rashi says this is the ikar sugya. There was just brought down agav. Here's the ikar sugya. Or we mentioned again yesterday the possibility that those Gemaros, or the earlier Gemaros here in kiddushin, were additions by the Saburaim. And therefore, when the Gemara started, it started from the second half of yesterday's daf. Now the Gemara hasn't mentioned kicha kicha yet. This is the first time it gets mentioned. Or, again, here is the ikar. Here the Gemara is trying to focus on it in the context of kiddushin, not in the other cases where it was simply trying to understand the lishonot or the breakdown of the Mishnah. So here, Tanya Maita LeMehocha, the Tana learns it out from here, that it works, which is, Ein kicha elo bekesef. That kicha is synonymous with money. V'chein umer, natati kesef sadeh, kach mimeni. That's kicha, kicha from Sdei Ephron. That we have a gzera shava, that just like kicha by Sdei Ephron refers to kinyan and kinyan kesef, where he's paying money and acquiring something. Also over here, kicha means kinyan kesef. And since the lashon of marriage is kikach ish isha, that shows you that there is a kinyan kesef over here. Balo dinu, why do I need a limud of kicha? It should be a kal v'chomer. Uma amavriya shenu niknet bibia, an amavriya who cannot be acquired through bia. Nicknate Bekesef, she is able to be acquired through money. That is the only vehicle by which an Amavriya is acquired, is through money. So if it works for an Amavriya to acquire her through Kesef, Zo Shenicknate Bebiya, Enu Digne Shenicne Bekesef, this woman who can generate Kiddushin through Bia, certainly she should be able to generate Kiddushin through Kesef. So therefore you have here what would otherwise be a Kal V'chomer, is let's look at Amavriya. Amavriya has only one vehicle to enter into the relationship with the Adon, and that vehicle is Kesef. Over here we have a woman who's entering into a relationship through Kiddushin. She has the ability to do it through Biyah. She has the ability to do Biyah where Namavriya does not, then certainly she should be able to enter into the relationship through Kesef, through money. Now the Gemara later on will reject the parallel at all, and say that Namavriya is totally different than a woman. That the Gemara could have answered over here as well. So the Gemara came up with a better answer, or an answer that undermines fundamentally the Kal V'chomer, which is Yivama Tochiach. Yivama proves that thesis wrong. Yivama only has one way to consummate the yibum. That's through biyah. So there, biyah works even without kesef. So now you see that kal vachomer doesn't work. Just because biyah worked doesn't mean that kesef will work, because we have a paradigm, yivama, where biyah works and kesef does not work. Malev yivama, shekein niknei pishtar. Wait a minute. Yivama also has another deficit, which is that shtar doesn't work by her. Tamar bezol shekein pishtar. Over here, the woman does work by the case of shtar. So here you have a woman who can enter into kiddushin through biyah or through shtar. So now, if I look at Yivama, Yivama says, well, I can have biyah without kesef, but maybe that's only because she only has biyah. If she had biyah and shtar, maybe kesef would work. Then I looked at Amah Ivriyah, and now I have a kal vachomer, which is, if biyah works by this woman and shtar, then certainly kesef should also work by her, because kesef works by an Amah Ivriyah, where biyah does not work. So Mar says, Talmud Omer, the pasuk says, kikach ish. Ha lama likra. So the pasuk says, kikach ish, to teach you that we need it. So Gemara says, why do I need the pasuk? Ha'achilah, you just brought it from a kal vachomer. Why do I need the pasuk at all? So Amar Ravashi, Mishum de'ikla meimar, because we have a possibility of saying, mikar de dina pircha, that there's a fundamental flaw in the logic of the kal vachomer. Ve'echa kamaitila, where are you bringing the kal vachomer from? And ama ha'ivriya. Mala ama ivriya, shken yotza bekesef. This is what I mentioned before, that you can fundamentally unwind the kal vachomer, which is that a Ama Ivriya is released through money. Tomar bezo sheina yotza bekesef. When it comes to a woman, she is not released through kesef. Kesef is not a vehicle for divorce. The only way you can have a divorce is a sefer kritut. So therefore, the kal vachomer is a failed kal vachomer, because you can't compare an Ama Ivriya to a isha or a kiddushin, because an Ama Ivriya, her relationship that is generated through kesef, also can be unwound through kesef. Maybe the fact that she can be unwound by kesef is what permits her to enter into this relationship through kesef. A woman who's married who cannot unwind that marriage through kesef, maybe kesef would not be sufficient means by which to generate kiddushin. The other thing, as Tosfos notes, is that kesef is not the only thing that ruins this kal vachomer. He says, "Hu adin matzi minkat ken yotza b'sheish." She goes after 6 years, v'yovel, v'simanim. And Ama Ivriya has many vehicles for release. It is after 6 years, after the yovel, or when she reaches puberty. All of those release her. The woman has none of those. The institution of Ama Ivriya is so different. So therefore, she could break down the kal vachomer in many ways. The Gemara just picked kesef, most likely because kesef is what we're after. And the fact that she's released through kesef might be what generates the kesef kiddushin in the beginning, or the kesef in the beginning for the Ama Ivriya. Now, the Balei HaTosafot bring from Rav Yaakov Meorleans, Akate Lamali Kikach. He says, okay, fine, leave the kal vachomer behind. But there's a hekesh. We're going to see that upcoming in the Gemara, that there's a hekesh between Ama Ivriya and an isha, and a married woman. If there's a hekesh between them, let us say that the hekesh teaches us that kesef works. Just like by Ama Ivriya it works, it should also work by a woman, because Emi Shivin al Hekesh. Hekesh, which brings a juxtaposition of two items and connects together between them fundamentally, is not subject to logical arguments. It's simply that is the rule, even if it's illogical. So over here, even though it's illogical to learn kesef from Ama Ivriya to Isha, as we just proved, nevertheless, if there's a Hekesh, we should be allowed to learn it. So how come the Gemara doesn't learn it that way? So Mar says, "V'yesh lamar di hekesh lachud havamina to lo sagi mi pruta." If I learn from the hekesh, I would think that a pruta is not enough. Ad shehei bet prutot kedbeinen ba'ama ivriya kedemukach lechayman. And we see that the minimum amount of money for an ama ivriya is two prutot. So I would think that if I did not have kikach ish isha and learn from that kikach kikach mistei afron, I would thought also the minimum value of kesef has to be two prutot, because the only reason we learn that kesef works is from a hekesh to an ama ivriya. Just like the minimum threshold for my Ivriya is two prutot. So to my woman, Kikach comes to teach me that kesef works even at the level of a pruta. That's what Rabbi Yaakov Meorleans says. Another answer that's given by the Rabbeinu Netanel, Teretz, Kein lo antol yadana da my Ivriya niknek bekesef, ela me hefta, lo nifdata, to hold be yotza bekesef, niknek bekesef, lo yofina mina kinyan shalisha, fishu bitziyata, eno yotza bekesef, kamo ama Ivriya. He extends the logic that we said over here, which is, how do you even know that an Ama Ivriya can be acquired through kesef? That is because it says, "Vahefter lo niftata," she was not redeemed. Meaning that the only reason that we know that she can be acquired through kesef is because she is released through kesef. So we see that the release through kesef is fundamental to the fact that she can be acquired through kesef. And therefore that failure of release by kesef for the woman who is married will also prevent us from learning from an Amma Ivriya that kesef works for kiddushin. Because the only reason that kesef works to acquire an Amma is because she can be released through kesef. That means if you don't have the ability to be released through kesef, we would never think that kesef works up front, even if you have the hekesh. Because the hekesh just says that if you're released through kesef, you can enter into a relationship with kesef. Here, the woman is not released by kesef, therefore she cannot enter by kesef. And that's why I need the limud of kikach ish isha. Right now, the Gemara says, v'yitztrich lemichtav yatzachinam, v'yitztrich lemichtav kikach ish. So I need both of these items. Giti kavatav rachman kikach hava amina kiddushim da'ev la bal didahavu. If I just had kikach ish isha, I would say yes, that the husband can create kiddushim through kesef, but the kesef that's given in the kiddushim belonged to the girl, not to the father. Kata rachman av yatzachinam. Yatzachinam tells us, yatzachinam in kosef, that in kesef la don zeh, but yesh kesef la don acher, that the father is entitled to the kesef kiddushim. Because the front of yatzachinam, had the Torah only written by yatzachinam and not kikachisha, hava amina, I would have had a possible premonition that hecha diyad ihi lididei, in a case where she gives him money, vikidashto, kave kiddushin, and they get married, that would be a good kiddushin. Because yatzachinam seems simply there is no money here. There's no money here. Then if we do have money here, it would work. And that means that if the woman gave it to the man, maybe you could generate kiddushin that way if you learned it out from yatzachinam. Therefore, I need kikach ish isha. That's why katav rachmana kikach velo kitikach. Kikach means the man must be the generator of the kiddushin, not kitikach, the woman be the generator of the kiddushin. Now, Tosafot already and many of the Rishonim challenge the understanding of this gemara that I just said, because how is it even possible that the kiddushin can be generated by the woman giving the man money? How does that work fundamentally? Tosafot says, perish kunchus, and the way that Rashi explains the case here is, she says, hari atam mikudash li, you are mikudash to me, and with the money that I'm giving you. That's what the woman says. You are mikudash to me with the money I'm giving you. Fakasha. The way we learned before, why is the word kiddushin used over here by the woman, is because she is like hektesh. Like hektesh, which is a surah li'olam. Which is that this woman is now only muteret to this individual and a surah to everyone else. That is not true by the man. Since the Torah allows for polygamy, that means that the man is not a surah li'olam. And then how can you use a lashon kiddushin of kiddusha that makes him restricted on others in that instance? He says that the language makes no sense. So he says, he can take other wives. He's not restricted to other women now. So Tosfot amends what is said here and says that you have to say, not that the nature of that relationship changes, but it's who initiates. Instead of him saying, Hari at mikudeshet li, where he is basically the requester that you be mikudeshet to me, she offers, Hari ani mikudeshet lecha, I am mikudeshet to you. Tzarech lamar, di aval didei, v'lav davka. And that when it says here that she gave the money to him, that's lav davka, ella v'amra, that she says it. What Tosafot ends up saying is, the money must be moving from the man to the woman. That is no question. The only question is, who speaks at that point in time? We would have thought that possibly when the man gives the money to the woman could say, Ari ani mikudeshet lecha. I'm mikudeshet to you with the kesef that you just gave me. So I have consideration, I got money, and now I'm going to be mikadesh myself to you, meaning dedicate myself to you, where I'll be a surah the olam. The only question is, who made that statement? Was it the husband who made the statement or the woman who made the statement? The havamina would be the woman could make the statement. Kikach ish isha teaches you kamash malan that only the man can make that statement. That's the way the Balei Tosafot learn it. On the other hand, Rashi clearly does not learn that way. Rashi learns that the woman has the right both to initiate the transaction to give money and then say, Hare ata mikudash li. So how is Rashi going to deal with it? Now that goes back to what I mentioned earlier, is that this is not a classic case of kinyan. Again, we use the kinyan here as a paradigm for generating a relationship between a husband and wife. But that doesn't mean that it's literally a kinyan. In the case of literally a kinyan, you would say the person is koneh, has to give something, and then the object is nikneh. How could you ever have a case where the nikneh, the one who's being acquired, pays and then gets acquired? That just doesn't work. In the world of kinyanim, there has to be some sort of exchange or consideration that's given. If you look at this as a kinyan, in the sense of real kinyan, then you would have to say the same thing, and that's what the Balei Tosafot and others are saying, that can't be that the woman's giving money to the man, because you have it all backwards then. Then there's no kinyan, there's no movement of the woman for consideration. Rashi, on the other hand, says that's not true. All you want to do over here is generate a relationship between the husband and wife. Kinyan is a paradigm by which we have relationships that are created, there's Gemira Tadat. So we're using that paradigm, and now bring it over to marriage. Well, if you do it that way, and you look at it in a more... right, in a more holistic manner, which is it's not exactly a kinyan, it's just a way to form a relationship, then it shouldn't matter which way the money is moving. All we're trying to do is simulate that type of kinyan or relationship generating kinyan, and it should make no difference whether it goes from the husband to the wife or the wife to the husband, as long as we've now got Gemira Tadat and a generation of that relationship. And that might be what Rashi is suggesting over here. The Kamash Malan is it doesn't work. It only works from the husband to the wife and not the wife to the husband. And that generates a problem in terms of double ring ceremonies. And that's why that could undermine the Kiddushin here because of Kikach Isha. If there's a double ring ceremony, that might indicate an exchange of value rather than an exchange of consideration that generates the Kiddushin over here in the Gemira Tadat. But that's a deficit in the double ring ceremony where the woman is giving something back to the husband when the husband's giving her something, and therefore maybe kiddushin or the relationship is never generated. And that's why, obviously, in marriages that are halachic, they don't allow for the double ring ceremony to take place during the process of the kiddushin or the chuppah. Right? Now the Gemara moves on and says, uba'ala, melameid shenikne bibiya. So good. It says, kikach ishisha uba'ala. If he takes a woman, and bala means that he has bi'ah with her. So from here we learn out that bi'ah is a vehicle for generating kiddushin. We just learned kesef, kicha kicha miste Ephron. And, that's separate. That's what we're talking about, midin d'oraita. That's a rabbinic position later on, and we'll get to that again here in the Masechta, Rav Bandgid Choman de Mikadesh bi'ah, that we will get to later in the Masechta, that the Chachamim did not allow this as a vehicle. Here the Gemara is just understanding what the Mishnah says, that Bia does work, or how does it work? All right, how do we know it works? Because that says, Ubala, Milamech, Nikdei Bibia. Hello, Dinhu, why do I need a Pasuk to teach me about Bia? It's a Kal V'chomer. Uma Yivama, Shei Nikdei B'Kesef. Now we're going back to, again, we said before that Yivama, that relationship is generated through Bia. Yet, Kesef does not work to allow for the acquisition or the completion, the consummation of the Yibum. So there, Yivamash Yinikne B'Kesef, Yinikne B'Bia. Zo Yinikne B'Kesef. Over here, the woman who is acquired through Kesef. Enu Din Yinikne B'Bia. Certainly, she should be acquired through Bia, or Kiddushin should be able to be formed through Bia. Ama Ivriya Tochiach. We can prove in Ama Ivriya that that's incorrect. Yinikne B'Kesef, because she does have Kesef, Ein Yinikne B'Bia. And Bia does not work by her. Tosafot over here asks on this, and says, wait a minute, how do you know that bi'ah does not work by nama ivriya? The answer is because the pasuk says, ube'ala. We have an miut, that bi'ah only works by kiddushin, and it doesn't work by nama ivriya. That means that you just put this into a circular logic. So he says, tema, I havi shotik mi ube'ala, hava mina ama ivriya, namini nikne bibiya, mikal v'chomer. Umi ma'atinan, ube'ala, ama ivriya. From the word ube'ala, that's how we learned that nama ivriya doesn't have it. And our Gemara is saying here, leave out the word ba'ala, and I could learn it from a Kal V'chomer. If you leave out the word ba'ala, then Ama Ivriya could be acquired through bi'ah, because you don't have that miut. So Tosafot says that you seem to have here a circular logic, which doesn't work. The only reason you know that Ama Ivriya doesn't have bi'ah is because of the word ba'ala that is mentioned by the case of Isha. So Tosafot says either the Gemara here is working, not looking at the source for the reasoning, but simply saying, we know that Nama Ivriya doesn't have it. Okay, happens to be we learn it out of Kiddushin as well. But leaving that aside, we can prove from this that sometimes the Gemara does that, which it says it ignores the sources for the limudim, and simply looks at them as, okay, now that we have the conclusion, what would I have done? Right. Once we've established this fact, what does it mean over here? That's one possibility over here. Otherwise, Tosafot also suggests over here that you could have learned the exclusion even without the word uba'ala, maybe from ubal instead of having the hey there. Tosafot comes up with ways to say that we could have had the exclusion even though it wouldn't have taught us the bi'ah. That's one thing that Tosafot asks. The second thing that Tosafot asks is, how come ki kach ish isha is not sufficient grounds for bi'ah? Because if you go to the Parshat Arayot in Achrimot and Kiddushim, when it talks about those arayot that are restricted, it uses the term ikach in every one of them. It says ish asher ikach et achuto vishal achata lo tikach. The word ikach is used to describe arayot. So now, why don't I just say kikach ish isha? The word ikach can mean kesef. The word ikach can also mean bi'ah. So then, why do I need the word bi'ala at all? So Tosafot says that even though the word kicha has both meanings, both kesef and bi'ah, he says context is important. By the case of arayot, you have no choice except to say that the ikach over there means bi'ah, because there's no other way to explain the word. Kesef is not relevant over there. In other cases where kesef is relevant, I would normally assume that the word ikach means kesef and not bi'ah. If you want to interpret the word as bi'ah, it has to contextually be mukach. It has to force you to say it that way, and it's not the natural way to interpret the word, and therefore I wouldn't have automatically concluded, just because it says ikach ish isha over here, that bi'ah should work. So now the Gemara says, I could have learned it out of a kal v'chomer, and I can't learn it out from a kal v'chomer. I would have learned it out from a kal v'chomer from Yevama. On the other hand, I can't do that because Yevama and Yevriah on the other side, that proves to me that the two are not correlated. Kesef and bi'ah can be separated because I have a Yevama bi'ah without kesef, and Yevama Yevriah I have kesef without bi'ah. So the two aren't correlated and the kal v'chomer doesn't work. So the Gemara says, wait, male Yevama Yevriah shein kinyan ala shumi shult. By Yevama Yevriah, that's different because there, her whole acquisition is not for marriage. Tomar bazosh kinyana l'shum yishut. But over here, where it's for marriage, maybe it's different. Maybe that isha and kiddushin and yivama are in the same category. That's about marriage. That's about consummating marriages. On the other hand, amai vriya is a transaction about buying the output of this girl. Unlike what I said before, that there is an end game of marriage here. Still up front, the purchase is not automatically a marriage. Because if he decides not to marry her, then the money will not be considered kesef kiddushin. So there's a possibility. If that's the case, we can't prove anything from amai vriah towards a woman. Now, by the way, that's how the Gemara could have gotten rid of the problem above by the kal v'chomer. That's what I mentioned to you before, that fundamentally an amai vriah might be different because she's not the shem yishut. The Gemara could have brought this answer earlier and wiped out the question of the kal v'chomer in the first case. That, all the Rishonim said, the Gemara could have, but didn't, and had other ways to try to get around it. So now the Gemara says, Tamalomar Ubala. So that's why you have Ubala. Gemara says, Valamali Kra, Achila. What do you need the puzzle for? You just proved that you can learn it out of a kal v'chomer from Yevama. And Rav Ashi, Mishum Deikul Meima, Mikar De Dina Pircha. Again, Rav Ashi says that fundamentally the limud from Yevama is flawed. And that is, Meheka Kamaiti Lami Yevama. We're learning it out of Yevama. Mali Yevama Shekain Zguka Ve'omedet. She is already in the parsha of marriage. Meaning that she's already standing there waiting to be a Yevama. Her natural course right now, she has an attachment. The natural outcome of this relationship is Yibum. Chalitza is needed to break that attachment. So Yibum would be the natural course. And that's why it works over there, that Yibia works over there. Tomar Bezusha in Zgukavo Medit. This woman is not naturally waiting to be Nitkadesh to this individual. That is something that has to actively be engaged in. So that's why you would have thought bi'ah won't work over here. Tamad lomar uba'ala. And that's why we have the word ba'ala to teach you that bi'ah works by our case over here. Now Tosafot says, wait a minute. That isn't so straightforward the way the Gemara learns over here. Because if we say that a yevama is more married than a woman who is just trying to enter into a marriage, then why don't we say by yevama that kesef works, that money works? Because we say bi'ah works. But if you're telling me that she's halfway married already, then just like bi'ah works, so too kesef should work. And if the fact that kesef doesn't work shows you that the fact that she's half married already has no relevance over here, because it doesn't allow you to use kesef. That means that bi'ah is working here nothing to do with the fact that she's half married, but generally because bi'ah works as a form of acquisition in relationships. So therefore, Tosafot brings two answers in the end as to why that's not necessarily true, which is, v'nira l'ri, the hachi parich, this is the question. Shekein zgukav omeret the bi'ah. Klomar, she'ikar mitzvata lakim lachiv shem. The main vehicle for a yivama is bi'ah. Why is that the main vehicle? Because the main purpose of her performing yibum is to generate a child that will be in the stead of her, the brother that passed away. So therefore, she is already mu'edit lebi'ah. That's the whole point of her getting together with this yavam, is to have bi'ah, to have children. Hilkach nakelo lakno bi'ah yoter misha. So therefore, we'll allow bi'ah to work here. We'll allow bi'ah to work here because bi'ah and yibum and that having of children is the only reason for this whole marriage. This whole marriage is premised on that. Not to say that other marriages aren't premised on pru or vu, because we know that many believe, and we saw in the introduction to Masechta, that there is no mitzvah kiddushin. Kiddushin is just a mechanism to get to pru or vu. But still, in the pru or vu, that is the need for the couple to try. It doesn't mean that there's not another relationship here. By yibum, the whole relationship is premised on the having of a child, lakim shem l'achiv. And therefore, maybe bi'ah can use by a yivama, not because she's kuka and she's already attached, but because the main purpose of her marriage is simply to have that child. And that's why bi'ah works. And that's why it doesn't work by isha. That's the way that the re answers it. There, Rabbi Elazar Mishanza, Rabbi Elazar Mishanz says, "Per shekein zkukav omeret, shebi'ah zo eino osela gomeret kiddushei rishon." That over here, it's very different. The yibum exists because of the kiddushin of the original brother. So kiddushin was already there. The bi'ah here is just a seal, a way to seal the kiddushin of the original brother. Maybe bi'ah can be a finishing touch. It cannot be a starting point. And that might be the difference. By yibum or by the yivama, you're just using bi'ah to close the deal. Maybe it works in that case. Or here, by the isha, you're not closing the deal. You're starting the whole relationship. Maybe over there, bi'ah doesn't work. So they formulate it slightly different to avoid the problem that we ask, which is that if there's this kika, that is the factor that makes we're makeo by the yivama, that means that kesef should work by her, shtar should work by her, all these other vehicles should work by her as well. The fact that those don't work by her shows you that this kika is not what is generating the kula of bi'ah. And so therefore, the re, or the Rabbi Elazar Mishanz, both use other explanations to show you how bi'ah is unique or special to the case of yivama. And that's why we would have thought it works by yivama, it doesn't work by an isha. Okay, we're going to stop here by the end of Daled Amud Bet.